Sandy Talks to Me Again. This is the News Quiz Extra. Now, people often say to me, but Sandy, what exactly is the News Quiz Extra? And I always say to them that if you imagine the News Quiz to be like, for example, a portfolio of emails detailing the handling of a News Corporation takeover bid for BSkyB, then the News Quiz Extra is what you'd end up with once your special advisor has looked down the back of his digital sofa. On with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
We start with a cutting from the Goosnair Parish News.
To commemorate the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, Goosnair Parish Council intend to place a commemorative plaque on the village green.
And our thanks to Brian Aldred for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Roisin Connaty. And opposite them on my left, Justin Morehouse and Rory Bremner. Jeremy, why did the hunt become the hunted?
Well, now, you see, I've been away on holiday. Haven't looked at any papers. My life has been good. Got to Malaga Airport last night. Thought, I'd better look at the papers. Bought a newspaper. Thought, oh, God. Murdoch, I think, Rupert Murdoch, is as close to a Bond villain as you can get without having charisma. It was sort of...
What an unexpected pleasure, Lord Leveson. When I say unexpected, I certainly wasn't prepared in any way. I had no knowledge of the pleasure. It was shielded from me by someone I won't name. I mean, you sort of want monstrous people to sort of have the eloquence and panache of Hannibal Lecter. But in my experience, when cornered, the truly evil are disappointingly dull, deluded, disingenuous and self-pitying. But, of course, the big story is actually Jezza Hunt. Now, we all feel very sorry for Jezza Hunt because when he had to take over responsibility for the BSkyB takeover bid, he was placed in a very difficult position between the Murdoch Empire, who thought the takeover should go ahead, and the Prime Minister, who thought the takeover should go ahead, and reconcile those views with his own view that the takeover should go ahead.
It is bizarre, though, because Hunt has urged the Leveson inquiry to allow him to clear his own name, but technically it reports to him as the Culture Secretary.
It's very rum, and he has the full confidence of the Prime Minister, which probably means Tuesday.
But don't you think they should get James Murdoch to actually take the oath again after lunch? Because there's a high chance that he's forgotten that he took it in the morning. All that stuff about JH, he had these conversations with Jeremy Hunt, and it's quite clear he means JH. And then he says, well, when I said JH, I actually meant Adam Smith, which is AS.
Yeah.
And
easy mistake to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's BS, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's annoying, though, that Jeremy Hunt, the thing that annoys me is I've hated my name all my life because it tends to...
It's one woman went, ah. Oh.
No, the thing is...
It's just Jeremy's.
Jeremy's are invariably knob ends. And then occasionally, from time to time, you know, you sort of think, well, Paxman, he's got a bit of credibility, or like Jeremy Isaacs was quite good at Channel 4. Or
Clarkson.
Well, you see, this is the trouble. Yeah. You've got Beadle, Clarkson, Hunt. I mean, it's a nightmare having my name.
Rupert's a nice name, isn't it? Much nicer than Jeremy.
If you're a bear, it is.
Did you not think that Rupert Murdoch looked like a melting Lord Leveson? It was so... It made the television thing very confusing because they kept cutting between them. It was like a sort of before and after skin commercial.
I think I've been suckered into it a little bit because I watch him and I see an old man just there and I kind of start feeling sorry for him, but he's got those hands that, you know, you can't disguise the age on the hands and the jowls. And I feel sorry for him. He seems to have lost his memory sometimes. And then the minute he gets out, he just skips down the street like the end of The Usual Suspects.
I did like the intonation of it. Taking the oath is, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So, help me, God.
Shelter Secretary Jeremy Hunt was targeted by James Murdoch during his testimony to the Leveson inquiry. Emails written by James Murdoch's chief lobbyist, Frederick Michel, appeared to indicate Hunt was in favour of recommending the takeover of B Sky B by the Borgia the Murdochs. In his testimony, the senior Murdoch, Rupert, acknowledged there had been a cover-up at the News of the World, but insisted that it had been covered up from him. That cover-up, to cover up the cover-up, was covered up as well, with the information hidden from James Murdoch in his email inbox, where he could never be expected to find it. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, fancy another dip?
Oh, yes, this is about the... We're back in recession!
Yay!
Yay!
That'll be just you and me excited, yeah, then. Yeah.
We're back in recession. We've gone into a double dip, which means loads of jokes about hummus and sherbet for all the comedians for the next 3 weeks.
Guacamole.
Brilliant.
As
guacamole,
well.
Yeah. That's one of the ones.
Salsa.
Salsa's a nice one.
Guacamole, he was Toad of Total's Mexican cousin.
Ganoush, that's a nice one.
That's a
lovely one.
But none of these are the dips involved. Basically, it's a double dip. We've gone into recession because George Osborne cut everyone's money and then they had no money to buy anything. And he's surprised. But he did say, he's a nice man, he said, if I had a magic wand, I would use it. If I had a magic wand, I would wave it. Cheers, George. Thanks for that. So, like, the idea that he would have a wand and might not use it... shows what a monster he is, that there's been times that he's thought, if I had my wand, I wouldn't even use it.
He also suggests that his chief secretary of the Treasury is Debbie McGee.
And he said they've got no plan B, seems to be what they keep saying. And David Cameron just said, yeah, it's just really disappointing, I've got nothing to say, which is unacceptable. You've got to have something to say. But he hasn't.
He's almost blaming the weather, wasn't he? So he said, well, I mean, it's been very wet. The economy is shrunk.
Yeah.
I think it's the come down after the excitement from the royal wedding. I think that's what's to blame.
Oh, yes, that's it.
Because everyone was so euphoric about the royal wedding, and then they just thought, but the winter's so dry. After all that excitement, and then April's weather is disappointingly normal and seasonal as it should be. I'm just confused and disoriented, and the economy spirals into recession. That's what happens.
Well, the next thing that they're saying is that the Queen's Diamond Jubilee four-day weekend is going to have a disastrous effect, as if the Queen, so far, her not taking a day off, has kept us all afloat.
I'm no great economist. I'm not like Martin Lewis, the money-saving expert, who's very good, and Robert Peston, yeah, and George Osborne's friends. It took me a while to realise that when they used to talk about figures at the factory gate output, I thought, number one, when was the last time you saw a factory in this country? We haven't got any anymore, have we?
No, I saw one in a Lowry painting once.
And secondly, why don't we open a factory making factory gates? This is the kind of thinking a double dip recession needs. On the morning the figures came out, I was walking through Manchester where I live, and I was approached by my usual big issue seller, who said to me, "Double dip special. We've held the price."
In fact, one of the things they say, the great fear is that we could end up like Greece.
I love Greece.
Me too. Hots.
The musical or the country?
I don't really mind. I like it. Absolutely fine.
I think actually he was talking the other day about it. He said, look, when we came into power, what's it, 2 years ago as a coalition, look, unemployment was falling and growth was on the way up. Now, it's taken us 2 years, but we've damn well managed to turn that round.
I tell you what is impressive, though, because we have a government completely mired in scandal. We've gone back into recession, and yet Ed Miliband remains unpopular. The UK is officially in a double-dip recession after figures were released showing the economy had contracted 0.2% over the first 3 months of the year. Yes, we're back in recession. And do you know, can I just say about this, I do feel a bit behind the times, because I honestly had forgotten that we'd come out. Well, I didn't understand it. The economy contracted 0.2% in the first 3 months, but the figures have an error margin of 0.2%. This, we could simply have zero growth, which I've had that since I was six. frankly, no picnic. 2 points to Roisin. Justin, who has been stoking feelings around a cleansing move?
This is the story of Newham Council, the Olympic Borough. It wants to send its residents who are receiving a housing benefit, who are currently in private accommodation, to Stoke, because it's cheaper. They've written to the Housing Association in Stoke, which are called the Brighter Futures Housing Association. Now, that's ambitious. calling a social housing scheme in Stoke Brighter Future, that's like calling Dignitas. Look for the white light, it might be fun after that. I don't know much about Newham, but why pick Stoke? Now, straight away, the giggles, people are going, go on, slag Stoke off, we hate Stoke. I'm not. I'm saying, if you want to get rid of people, don't send them to Stoke. It's very handy. It's right on the M6, West Coast Main Line, A50, you're across to the M1. If you want to get rid of people from the East End of London, send them quite far away. Send them to the Outer Hebrides. Get a Cockney enclave going. Call it Very North East Enders. Just... The last time I looked, we were still in Europe. We're still in Europe, aren't we? We could send them to the Costa del Sol. Most of them will have relatives there. It's a strange thing. I mean, call me a romantic old dreamer, if you will, but it seems that in the Olympic Borough of Newham, instead of spending 20 gazillion on a two-week egg and spoon jamboree, we should be building houses for people to live in.
Crazy thing.
There you go.
That's what's happening. All the other countries are coming around to London, so London's kind of tidying up. It's a bit like, you know, when somebody's coming around for a dinner party and you get embarrassed about your own house. They say, we can't let them see us live like this. And you move all the poor people to Stoke-on-Trent. It's just like, you know, putting the rug over a carpet stain or putting all the empty wine bottles in the next door neighbours.
I do know something about Newham, actually. Vera Lynn. Vera Lynn comes from Newham. Oh. Yeah. Lives in Stoke now.
If someone had told her in 1945 she'd have a brighter future, she wouldn't have believed it, would she?
What I liked is Housing Minister Grant Shapps said the whole affair was an attempt by the BBC to embarrass the government. And you think, no, just when everything was going so well. Of course, if you go to the Midlands from London, you have to get used to some very alien traditions. There's cheap beer, fields, people who are nice to each other. I mean, there's all sorts of...
I like having poor people in London. I'm poor people. I think poor people should stay in London. We'd make London what it is. It's kind of... You know, just
overcrowded.
That's why we're good.
I think we've got this idea of the benefit cap all wrong, because I think actually it is... It is a real cap. I think it's a benefit cap. It's a real cap that people on benefit will have to wear, and then they doff it.
Just sounds like something very unpleasant for a woman to wear, that's all.
Child benefit cap.
Newham Council plans.
I thought that was a smattering of applause or people removing them.
Do you not think the Olympics would be better if you could just join in if you fancied?
Definitely.
The very first man to... I don't know a lot about sport, but I do know this one. The very first man to win the Olympics tennis was an Englishman. Actually, it was an Irishman. And he was in Greece on holiday in 1896, and they hadn't got enough people to make up the tennis team. And he played in his brogues and in his flannels, and he won. And that's how it should be. So just some amateur who turns up and says, well, I don't mind having a go. And
That's kind of how Tim Henman used to play.
Newham Council planned to send 500 families to Stoke after claiming they couldn't find enough properties for people on welfare. Similar plans have been suggested by Westminster Council, leading to fears of social cleansing. Westminster Council said that rehousing people on benefits was simply one of the options they were looking at. If all else fails, they're just going to release the hounds. 2 points to Justin. Rory, why might those who lord it over us become more accountable?
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is the House of Lords, obviously, and it's causing a lot of sleepless afternoons over there. It's about the House of Lords. Nick Clegg, who's David Cameron's go-past guy when it comes to reform. This is the coalition agreement where basically David Cameron said, we'll take health, transport, education, defence, treasury and foreign affairs, and you can have voting system and laws reform. There was a committee that said that they thought the House of Lords should be 80% elected, which is 80% more than the government. I think I'm right in saying.
Well, the number of peers should be reduced from 800 to 450, which I would have thought was just a week's worth of natural wastage, but... Oh, come on, it's basically a retirement home for the politically bewildered.
But Nick Clegg's actually pushing ahead to reform the House of Lords, which is odd, because I don't remember him promising that he would never reform the House of Lords.
Has anybody ever watched the House of Lords for any period of time. The cameras are on these banks of peers, and there's that many of them slumped to sleep. It's like watching a life-size game of Guess Who halfway through.
I'd love to go in. You know, on a Sunday afternoon, the best time to have a little sleep is if you, like, fall asleep on an armchair and there's, like, the telly on, like, a Western or something, and someone pottering in the kitchen. So I can understand why they go in the lodge. Just someone sort of gibbering away. Yeah. No, it's really... And you'd have such a great snooze in there.
Clegg said that they should... Didn't he say we shouldn't have a referendum because that would be outsourcing the decision to the public?
No, subcontracting.
Subcontracting.
Yeah, like it was a bunch of labourers to say, yeah, what's this amendment all about? Yeah. What's going on? Yeah, put out in your skip, mate.
If they want to reform it, shouldn't they just call those people in from that 60-minute makeover programme? Take them an hour.
What, look good naked? How to look good naked?
No, isn't there one of those ones where they come into your house and suddenly make it place
oh,
you,
yeah,
you,
the house.
You actually want to live
the
in?
Lord, make the people in the Lords, the actual Lords, look good naked.
I've seen that programme, How to Look Good Naked, and the answer to the question is put some clothes on.
A report from the Joint Committee on Lords Reform has said that the House of Lords should be 80% elected with the other 20% chosen by Britain's Got Talent. A Lords Reform Bill is expected to be a centrepiece of the May the 9th Queen's speech, and I'm sure we're all interested to hear what the Queen can add to the discussion about the outdated, undemocratic institution still clinging to power, so that'll be fascinating.
Rise up and get real!
I think for Rory's professional integrity, we should point out it was Jeremy Hardy doing that.
At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Roisin have got 4 points, but so too have Justin and Rory. We start round two with a cutting from the outdoor camping magazine read by Charlotte Green.
When camping, it's sensible to prepare for a variety of different conditions. I always bring a general-purpose peg and a broad selection of hookers.
And our thanks to Donna Blake for sending us that. Jeremy, who wants teenagers to say, no sex, please, we're clever?
Oh, little Mickey Gove's had another idea. Michael Gove suggested that in some ways doing well at school might be a better disincentive to early pregnancy than sex education. It's the idea that the poor should be disincentivized from having children. You know, young girls have kids as some sort of validation, but middle-class people have children for the same reasons. They just do it slightly later. There's plenty of middle-class girls who do very well at school and do very well at university, put in a token 3 or 4 years in marketing, quickly marry somebody, and then pop out one child after another until they've got more than can be fitted into any people carrier on God's green earth. And then when they find a people carrier that will hold their preposterously named progeny, they pull up outside nursery and then primary and then secondary, none of which are within walking distance because they've read the SATs, and then rush home because they've got to play tennis and talk about how they don't have enough me time anymore.
I do think Michael Gove talking is oral contraception at its most effective.
He says he's got this idea that more qualified teenagers don't have sex. I mean, how dull a time must he have had at Oxford? You'd think, until you read the Cherworld newsletter in Oxford from 20 years ago, and it talks about a five-in-a-bed romp featuring Michael Gove.
Really?
Absolutely.
Really?
I'm quoting, it says, new President Gove claims he was only seeking comfort after being beaten up in Aberdeen on Boxing Day. Comes from, it goes back to his five-in-a-bed romp 20 years ago.
The shocking thing about that is that you've actually Googled Michael Gove and five-in-a-bed romp.
I think we have to be clearer with children, don't you? I think I got sex education mixed up with home economics. For years, I thought you put a condom on a cucumber to keep it fresh. I just thought it was...
My sex education was quite full-on. When I was 12, I was at my best friend's house and we saw her dad put a video into a box on top of the wardrobe. And when we saw, he was sort of like, oh, it's a karate film, girls. Never let me see you in my karate films. And then we weren't interested in karate, but then we watched The Karate Kid and then we signed up for karate lessons. And then one Sunday afternoon, we thought, doesn't your dad have a load of karate videos? And we brought it over to my house. We could have watched it at her house, but I wanted to pick up a bag of M&Ms, really make an afternoon of it. So we thought it was a karate film. So we get over and we put it on and my mum caught us. She walked in. I think most mothers, on some level, anticipate, if they've got teenage sons, anticipate dealing with something like that, but no mother ever anticipates walking in to her 12-year-old daughter's bedroom at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and finding two karate-clad girls watching a hardcore porn film in stone-cold silence eating a bag of M&Ms.
I've got a teenage son now, and I sat him down a few years ago and did that 15-minute kind of, this is a difficult conversation, there are things I'm going to say that I'm going to swear. And after 15 minutes, he just looked at me and went, are you going to tell me you're not my dad? I went, no, he went, is it about sex? I went, yeah, he went, I know.
Michael Gove told a Commons Education Select Committee that educating children well in a range of subjects can be as effective as sex education in stopping them from practicing unsafe sex. Critics denounced it as the most ill-matched combination of speaker and subject matter in the history of select committees. Unaware that in the very next room, Russell Brand was lecturing on home affairs policy. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, have a listen to this. Roisin, who's a case of mutton dressed as worm?
Oh, I had no idea what that was linked to.
Do become one.
The Spice Girls have been cloned with a lamb. So you've got lamb spice.
Tika.
So basically, if you like the Spice Girls, but you haven't got time to listen to them and you're hungry... it's all about convenience now. So they've cloned Spice Girls and lambs. This isn't true. They've cloned a lamb with a roundworm. A roundworm. Because lambs are fatty and roundworms aren't fatty. And so if you want lamb, you can now have a lamb that isn't fatty but is half worm.
Is it fair to suggest you haven't entirely understood the science? Peng Peng is a sheep cloned with a worm.
Nick Clegg. It serves as a punchline to anything else where you can't...
Do you suppose a sheep cloned with a worm is difficult to carve? Well, you cut it in half, you get two new sheep.
It's a great breakthrough, because up until now, you know, sheep have been very difficult to keep on the hook when you're fishing for... when you're fishing for wolves.
It's a Chinese thing. China has 7% of the world's arable land, but 22% of the world's population. It seems to me if the Chinese are going to work on animals in this way, what you really want is a duck that is born both crispy and aromatic.
But by crossing sheep with a worm, they actually, as a byproduct, they have become the world's leading exporter of draft excluders.
Bleating draft excluders.
Well, they'll actually be great for the next series of One Man and His Dog, won't it? Because in future, the shepherd will just be standing in an empty field and he'll blow his whistle and all these sheep will emerge from the ground, followed by this sort of suffocating collie dog saying, well, this job's changed, hasn't it?
A new breakthrough in cloning comes in the form of Ping Ping, the sheep, created using roundworm DNA in order to create a higher level of unsaturated fatty acids. Scientists say the sheep contains a good type of fat, although the sheep itself thinks it's just got big bones. This type of genetic engineering worries some people, but apparently there is absolutely no truth to the claims that scientists have created some kind of Frankenstein animal, said the sheep. 2 points to Roisin. Justin, why have postmen got a microchip on their shoulder?
Ah, this is the story of the government failing to crack down on dangerous dogs. Mm. Unions have said that the government have been tinkering around the edges of the problem. That's one thing you should never do with a dangerous dog, is tinker with its edges. They don't like that, don't they? Their proposals have not gone far enough. Apparently, they're just closing a loophole, which is... If you've ever seen one of those programmes, that's what they use to get a dangerous dog. It's a loop hole, and they pull... good. I think we have to acknowledge that, you know, these days, dangerous dogs exist, but there are far more dangerous owners. This is the problem with dogs. They get treated badly, and then they start attacking postmen. They've been watching too many cartoons. Keep the dogs away from. I'm a dog lover. You got a dog? I've got a lovely dog. I've got a chocolate Labrador. She's gorgeous. And I think we should treat our dogs a bit better and they will behave a bit better. For example, I come down in the morning and the first thing I do before I've done anything any morning is I open the back door so she can go out and do a poo on my grass. All the time going, good girl, good girl. And she's squeezing one out looking at me going, he's an idiot, this one. And she trots back in with a look on her face that says, I'll be having my breakfast while you pick that up, idiot. We should treat dogs, talk to them. We should Yorkshire Terriers, people don't like them. They're yappy, yappy. They're from Yorkshire. They're value conscious. You feed them, they're like, how much is it? This is what's happening. The devil dog of the 70s when I grew up was the Alsatian. That was the devil dog of the 70s. That was fashionable then. It's a German shepherd. If you could speak to it, it's just sad. Are you all right? Nine. Do you think I want to be here working security in Newham? I'm just following orders.
Oh, I feel sorry for this imaginary dog.
You shouldn't have a German sheepdog. You'd be going, these sheep are all over the place. There is no order in this field. They should be in neat lines wearing uniforms. They're too fat. Clone them with worms. Clone them with worms.
What's your dog called?
My dog's called, and she'll be listening.
Give her a shout out.
She's going, Coco, Coco, Loco. She's called. She's called Coco, and she was born on Easter Sunday, since she's chocolate, so that's why I called her Coco. And she's. And she's the love of my life. I genuinely.
That's so tragic.
Genuinely. Love her. The other day, is this wrong or funny? But. Just to see if I could get away with it, for a bit of empathy, instead of taking her for a walk on a lead, I fashioned a thing out of an old wire coat hanger myself and put it into a U and put some luminous yellow tape and just pretended I was blind, just to see if she'd be up to the task. And this woman shouted, she genuinely, true story, she shouted out, she went, you're a fraud! And I thought to myself, have I left my glasses on? Because that's a giveaway for a blind fella, isn't it? And she shouted, she went, guide dogs are yellow, not brown. And I thought, this has gone too far. And I went, who would sell a blind man the wrong colour dog?
But this whole thing is about dangerous dogs, isn't it? It's about danger. Have you ever been injured by your dog?
No, she's embarrassed me in public. Right. But I've embarrassed her more.
I've been injured by my dog. Yeah. Although, to be fair, I shouldn't have been riding her. I think it was a mistake.
Dog chipped, she now runs about 34% faster.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had mine chipped. Every time she lies on the sofa, she changes the channel on my Freeview. I've had Jeremy chipped.
Hey?
Yeah, next week we're having him done.
Have you seen this thing you can get for your dog? It's on a collar, it's a little camera, and it's wireless, and you're out all day, and the dog wanders around the house, and the camera takes photographs every now and then to show you what it's been up to. I mean, there's nothing like being at work, logging onto the website, and just seeing picture after picture after picture of a spaniel's backside.
The government has promised postmen and presumably women extra protection against being attacked by dogs. About 4,000 posties a year are attacked by dogs who are livid about the price of a first-class stamp. At present, only 60% of dogs are microchipped and the other 40% are still on CFAX. In response to the plans, a delegate from the Royal Society for the Protection of Dogs said, sausages. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Roisin have got 8 points, but so too have Justin and Rory. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from Golf World magazine.
We asked top golfers to reveal their unusual rituals and superstitions. Bubba Watson says, before every round, I give my wife a kiss on the first hole.
And our thanks to Graham Spencer for sending us that. Jeremy, which bard might have found it hard to work alone?
Well, it's Shakespeare week on the home service. Because William Shakespeare, had he been born, which he was, would still have been dead. And it was his birthday this week, and apparently he had a co-writer. Probably he had a co-writer, William, because, well, you know, he was from a small market town in South Warwickshire, Stratford-upon-Avon, came to the big city, probably a bit out of his depth. He met up with a co-writer called Tommy Middleton, who was a Londoner,
And he'd say, right, son, I've got a busting guard here for the play, right? It's about a Jewish bloke and his daughter, right? It's called The Merchant of Redditch.
Tommy would say, no, Willie, boy, look, the thing is, right, he's London cosmopolitan, not so, like, you know, continental type. You want somewhere a bit flash, you know, a bit Italian, you know what I mean? Like Venice or something. All right, Venice, OK, The Merchant of Venice. And that's how they went on.
Another one, Two Gentlemen of Walsall.
I went to Stratford-upon-Avon and had a look at all the places, and Shakespeare was born just round the corner from the William Shakespeare Museum. That must have confused him when he was growing up.
It was only All's Well That Ends Well, wasn't it? It's a comedy. Because he just needed to gag up his comedies, because they are rubbish. I mean, Shakespeare, tragedies are good, comedies, bloody rubbish. Oh, two twins, not confusing, one's a boy, one's a girl. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, Shakespeare. It doesn't work.
I like Shakespeare when his best work was when he collaborated with Gwyneth Paltrow. Yeah.
A new analysis suggests that Shakespeare's All's Well That Ends Well could have been co-written by fellow playwright Thomas Middleton. The play has an abrupt change of style at the end of Act Two, when the noble Bertram and his follower Parolis prepare to flee France for Florence, only to stumble on an escaped Nazi war criminal whose ties to the international banking system are part of a conspiracy that leads all the way to the White House. I haven't read it. 2 points to Jeremy. Roisin, why is it a wise move to spend time with Grandma?
Oh, because they believe old people have wisdom to pass on to young people. Mm-hmm. There's a story in the Telegraph this week that said that because we're segregated more and more so from generational segregation between young people and old people, they're not getting a chance to pass on their knowledge to the youth. But I think even if you did spend time with them, the problem isn't that, you know, listening, it's Google. That's the problem. Because if they're like, do you want to hear my story about the war? So, no, I'll just Google it, thanks. Do you want my recipe for apple pie? I've got 422 million on the net, actually, so I don't need it. But yeah, they want to pass on the technology, I think, more so than spending time is
a
problem.
It's a shame, don't you?
Yeah, it's a real shame.
That's why you've been sat with me. You realise that, Roisin. Because I'll tell you what, it's not what you know. It's who you know. And a swan can break your arm. You never see them do it, though, do you? You've never seen a swan with a baseball bat mounting back. Give us that bread, you slag. Give us that bread.
My nan, not long ago, got her passport renewed, and she came back and she was in a bit of a mess. My nan's an old Irish lady, and she was like, oh, I don't look great in these photos. And when I asked her to show me the photo, you know when you go into the passport photo machine, you can choose the background. My nan was sat in the middle of the Manchester United football team. Pointed out to her, she couldn't get her head around the technology. She acted like she'd been quantum leaped. She was like, I've never even met them. And I sort of pointed out, I said, oh, it's because you're old, and I tried to explain it to her, and she was really embarrassed. But then she phoned me up a few days later and said, and you know, it's not because I'm old. My best friend Rita did the same thing happened to her, and she ended up in Postman Pat's van. Imagine Rita, this old Cockney lady, so the cat's not even mine. I don't want to bring him to Corfu. He wants to snack in. But I lived with my nan for quite a long time, and so it's a sad. I think we dismiss them because of technology and because of facts, and a lot of the information they sort of, a lot of old people isn't always based in facts.
I think it's very true that old, because the thing about old people is they want to talk because, you know, they get isolated. And I used to get my alterations done. I don't mean like breast implants and things. I used to get things shortened because I'm not the tallest of people. And I used to go to this old Jewish tailor called Mr. Goldstein in Venn Street in Clapham. And I'd go in and he was about 5 feet tall, Mr. Goldstein. He'd say, you know, Mr. Hardy, every day's another learning experience. You know, when the drip dry came in the early 60s, we thought marvellous. You can wash your shirt out at night, you hang it up over the bath in the morning, it's dry. The perspiration we didn't take into account. Perspiration builds up in the small of the back. Drip dry doesn't breathe. It's nylon. It's artificial. It builds up. You go out in the cold. You've been in the warm. You've perspired. You go out in the cold. It gets cold. You get a chill in the small of your back. But every day is another learning experience, Mr. Hardy. Do you know what? I've carried that wisdom with me always.
this idea that when somebody older than you speaks, that immediately you should give it some reverence, you know. But we have to accept the fact that some old people are really thick. I remember my gran, who's no longer with us, she had to get off the last bus. My gran sat me down one Sunday lunchtime and she said, Justin, I need to speak to you, I need to tell you some things. So I thought, right, she's going to impart some wisdom. And she just sat me down and she said, you know, I was 18 before I ever saw the sea. She said, I was 35 before I knew what a lesbian was. She said, and now your mum's cooking lasagna for Sunday dinner. The world's gone mad.
And apparently only a third of 16 to 24-year-olds have any contact with the over-65s. And, you know, a burglary is never the best time to ask for life tips. So. Just saying. According to a survey by the charity WRVS, older people feel unable to pass their wisdom on to the young because they are so segregated. 25% of over-65 said their opinions were not respected. Actually, it was 50%, but who cares what they think? The charity is undertaking a project to bridge the gap between generations, starting with lessons in how to rap about the price of fish today, followed by an afternoon of drive-by shootings on mobility scooters. 2 points to Roisin. Justin, who's been transplanted out of their job?
This is a story of a woman from New York who donated a kidney, not exactly directly to her boss, but she donated a kidney in the name of her boss so her boss could go up the waiting list. It's like some kind of transferring your club card points or something, and then still got sacked. Exactly. Do you know, I mean, how much do you have to do these days to keep a job? If giving one of your organs is not enough in a double-dip recession, was it? We have to give both.
Well, to be fair, Nick Clegg's donated his spine. So.
And she got sacked because she was off work too often with sickness directly because she'd had a kidney removed. It's an awful story, isn't it? It's at least employee of the month if you give a kidney.
Yeah.
You'd expect that, wouldn't you? And every time you've not done some work, somebody could say, you've not done that report for me. You just lift up your shirt and go, remember the scar? Remember what I gave for you? You're all right, take it easy.
I think that I'm with the boss on this one, though. You know, people at home might know this, but I hug each one of the panellists at the beginning of the show. It looks like I'm being nice. I'm assessing all of you for organ donation.
I think she sounds like a creep. It serves her right, grovelling to the boss. Like, I bet, you know, people keep talking about when Blair flew halfway around the world to go and meet Murdoch before the 97 election. I bet he went with two buckets of his own offal. I've got bone marrow, I've got everything. Just give me good press.
The woman who received the kidney, Ms. Brucia, although her body accepted the kidney, she's on permanent medication to suppress her, what do you call it, conscience.
So she doesn't need a kidney, she needs a heart transplant.
Something.
She needs a black, shriveled heart removing and, well, just leave it at that.
Was she a garage boss, wasn't she? Was a garage?
Yeah, yeah.
God, love her ripping you off over spare parts. Admin assistant Deborah Stevens has filed a legal action against Atlantic Automotive Group, a garage in Long Island, alleging that the manager for whom she donated a kidney then had her dismissed. She described the news that she'd been fired as galling, which was remarkable, as she'd given her gallbladder to a trainee. Her boss, Jackie Brucia, said, "Don't expect to feel special because of what you did for me," which is normally one of Clinton's less popular cards. 2 points to Justin. Rory, listen to this. I'm all lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for a special offer. Guaranteed personality. Rory, can you empty your bag, please?
What now?
Yeah.
This is something to do with a bit of shoplifting.
Shoplifting, yes.
This is self-service things, and people have just been taking it a little bit too literally. That's the only thing. Something like a third of people have either admitted or owned up or have been found to be shoplifting by using the self-service tools. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it a third of people or a third of chefs? I don't know. Was it a third? And I can't get a hang. Do you
use
them? I
hate them.
I can't
hate them
stand
with
them.
Such a passion. I can't reach. And that unexpected item in the bagging area. Okay, yeah. It's really not ever that. It's not like you look and there's a goblin. It's. But if they want want to cut thefts at self-service checkouts, couldn't they just have members of staff scan your items for you?
Too maverick.
If anybody's listening, can I just put a personal plea out? If anybody works in the supermarket who's listening to this show now and you're working this weekend and you get that moment where you're scanning items in yourself and you go beep, beep, and then the third one doesn't go, instead of looking for the number, instead of going for assistance, just look up. Just look at the person who's stood in front of you, another human being who's just looking at you with the eye language going, put it through. It's really not worth your effort. You work for Tesco's. They make a billion a second. It's plum tomato. Send it through. Who cares?
There's no challenge in that. You see, what's happened to the dignity of the old-fashioned criminal? People didn't used to do things like that. They used to have a van with false number plates. Stockings out there. They used to have shooters. They'd have a lock-up in Nine Elms, somewhere like that. There's no dignity in crime anymore.
I once was using one of those machines and I was wearing a black and white jumper and... scanned myself and I came up as a value aubergine. A third of us have admitted to stealing items at supermarket self-service checkouts. Everly Stone, a psychologist, said, "These statistics show a lack of morals in this country today, proof that people looting and rioting last summer was just a warning of the flagrant courgette theft that was to follow." Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by somebody, and it says, Sussex to get no respite from April showers until May.
Ms. Connerty.
This is a cutting from the iPhone TV Guide app. At 7:50pm, don't tell the bride. 8 o'clock, I woke up gay. 9pm, don't blame the dog.
Morehouse.
Mine's come from Mr. Steve Doughty of Haltwhistle in Northumberland, and again it's from a TV guide. This is from the free sat guide information for the Saturday cookbook. Joining Nadia Swahala and Mark Sargent as chef Aaron Craze, an actress turned food writer Faye Ripley. Recipes include Indian spice meatballs and Bakewell cake. This program contains scenes of a sexual nature and acts of violence.
This one's sent in by Dalwyn Atwell of Bracknell, and it's from the Wokingham Church newsletter. It says, parking. A number of residents of Sturges Road have complained about bad parking. Please do not park on double yellow lines, do not park on the pavements, and do not swear or make rude gestures to the people who rightly complain about your bad parking. It does not help if you promise to pray for people that they may have an improved state of mind.
Okay, let's take a look at the final scores. Justin and Rory have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Roisin for 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from Birkenhead News sent in by John Bergen.
Local resident makes a stand on dog mess.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Jeremy Hardy, Roisin Connerty, Justin Morehouse and Rory Bremner. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodri Crooks and James Kettle, with additional material by Hannah George and Tom Neenan. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.